Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and happy Friday to everyone out there, to our devoted franchise-focused podcast listeners, and to all those in franchising who are looking to get a little bit more of the inside scoop that we took away from the franchise development seminar we had earlier this month. Great news today. We have a very special guest in Rocco Fiorentino, the president and CEO of Benetrends, who was our host that day and took us through all the conversations that brought up these topics that Rick and I discussed on last week's show. So because we had that opportunity, we figured we'd sort of do a take two on lessons learned from the seminar, get Rocco on and have Rick and Rocco go through a nice little back and forth and a open commentary to tackle those difficult questions as they relate to a lot of the big things regarding franchise development and what franchise brands and franchisees should do to approach those things. So we are very excited to get to that. Of course, first, I wanted just to bring up a few more things again. Our podcast is now live on iTunes. We have a top 10 downloaded to YouTube and to SoundCloud. Please check us out there and get, little 3 to 5 minute segments that answer a lot of these tough questions that we're talking about today. Of course, definitely track Rick's contributions to Entrepreneur and to Franchise Gator. Find us on LinkedIn and Twitter. Of course, you can find Rick, myself, and Rocco on LinkedIn to learn more about us and connect with us there. If you want to leave some comments for us, do so on Twitter, at EducatedZ. That is at EducatedZEE. And we'll be sure to answer those in upcoming podcasts. So, without further ado, wanted to go ahead and get us started today. It's a Friday. It's wide open. It's free-for-all Friday for us here. So I want to certainly talk about these questions. But if we get off to a different tangent that's relevant and important to our listeners, we'll certainly keep on going that way. So, Rocco, Rick, I know you're on the line and waiting for me. So thank you two gentlemen for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us, Graham. It's certainly a pleasure for me to be on the show today and looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
doesn't Rick and Rocco sound like an animated cartoon? Oh, no.
We can do something, Rick.
Yeah, maybe that can be Pixar's next movie.
There you go.
Rocco, you did such a fantastic job taking us through all these different presentations during that seminar and helping us tackle those tough questions franchising. Before I dig into some of those, tell us a little bit more about sort of your experience in franchising and why you were such a good fit to take us through that and help us navigate those difficult questions through such an important seminar.
Sure, Graham. No problem. So I currently am the president and CEO of Benetrends Financial. We are located in North Wales, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia. And at Benetrends, we are a funding source for new and existing franchise candidates that want to either expand their franchise business or go into new business or buy an existing franchise. So been around for 34 years and have helped a lot of folks kind of finally get to the opportunity to live their dream and become their own boss. And in franchising, certainly a great way to be in business for yourself, but certainly not by yourself. And also, I was a large multi-unit franchisee of Krispy Kreme. Back in 2000, I was the developer for the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware areas, and also was a franchisor. So I kind of got to understand both sides of the equation. And now on the financing side, I get to see so many great entrepreneurs select these brands that are just great brands, have great systems, and finally live their dream and go do something they've been passionate about for so long. So in our session a little bit ago, we were able to talk to some franchisors who have done some really, really cutting-edge things with their system and talk to some franchisees who share with us what they love about the system, what they love about being in business for themselves, what they love about franchising. So that's been really, really cool. And actually, Rick Bizio is a client of Benetrends. And Rick, a while back, used his 401k funds to get his business started and is extremely successful in what he does as a consultant. So certainly like to answer any questions Rick may have for me and see if we can put some thought to it.
Got it. No, awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that background. And, based on the fact that you've served on, obviously, the supplier side, being with Benetrends and working on the franchisee side, and being very intimately involved with the franchisor as an area developer, you certainly can speak from all aspects of franchising and have experience on all sides. And I guess the first question I want to bring up, because this led to an interesting conversation last time and certainly has a financial component tied to it, you know, Ed Kelly brought up in the conversation when he was talking about what he did for Jiffy Lube and what he has done for Burger Joint, talking about, you know, sort of the ramifications and the positives and negatives associated with cutting deals for all-star early adopter franchisees. You know, in your mind, Rocco, and I'd like to hear sort of the back and forth of Rick on this because he sort of gave me his perspective last time. You know, in your experience working for Krispy Kreme, for, you know, Swiss Farm Stores, working with a bunch of franchisors as the presidency of Benetrends, do you think there are there are right times to offer those types of, you know, deals to those types of franchisees, or is that something you typically would recommend a franchisor to avoid?
You know, I would share with you, Graham, that there is no one size fits all. As an early adopter, as an emerging franchisor, you've got to prove your system is worth the investment to some of these candidates coming in. Now, some franchise candidates actually like the brand new franchise brands because there's territories available, it's new, it's exciting, and some don't want to take the risk. So I think everyone's level of risk differs, and I think as a young franchisor, I would certainly be willing to make some concessions for those who believe in me early and invest in our brand early on. Now, having said that, I think as the brand matures, you have to start being a little more disciplined about the consistency of the system. But I think everyone would understand and expect early adapters to be able to benefit from the little bit of the higher risk that they take. Would you agree, Rick?
Yeah, I guess a question for you, though. When I hear the concept of cutting deals, what I really hear is putting a deal together that is outside of the FDD. In other words, taking what your current offering is and in some way or another making it more attractive for a specific individual. And it's an interesting thing. It really is, because when you look at making your business proposition attractive to new franchisees, you can do that within your offering circular. But it does become a little bit more complicated when you cut deals outside of the offering circular. And even though it may be really good, I think, at the beginning, because you need to do it in some cases, later on, most franchisors kind of wish they hadn't had to do that.
Well, that is so true. When it comes to the franchise disclosure document, it is always appropriate to disclose and required to disclose any special deals. Now, some franchisors and or their attorneys may be more generic, and it may state that periodically they may make adjustments in the franchise fee or the term or the royalty for those early adopters without getting into specifics. That may raise a question to a new candidate coming in saying, I've read that in your FDD, so what was that deal and how do I get it?
Mm-hmm.
And as a franchisor, I may say, well, I did make some concessions for the first five franchisees. However, we're now on number 37, and we haven't done that in a while. Or we're now on number 6 or 7. You know, what is the benefit for me to do it? Like anything else, everything is negotiable. And franchisors that are smart will want to take a look at the type of franchise candidate they're getting in. If I were a franchisor and I were an emerging franchisor trying to build my system with what I call worthy franchisees, especially ones that have had experience or have other systems and have an infrastructure where they are a management company and they're going to be able to run my franchise, follow the system, not quit at the 50-yard line, not go in undercapitalized, I probably would make some concessions and say, what does it take that's reasonable? If it's something unreasonable, I would not risk my brand. But if it's something reasonable, I may do that to get you into our system. And as you well know, a lot of times franchisees, especially good ones, are able to share thoughts and teach franchisors about new products or new techniques or new things on building the system. So I'm not afraid of it, but I think, like anything else, it has to be done with a lot of thought and a lot of caution.
I agree.
So I would encourage emerging franchisors to consider things, but understand that there has to be benefit. One of the things that always gets me is franchisors say, I've got a couple first rights of refusal out there. And I say to them, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, I signed a few franchise agreements with the first three folks, and because they bought one, they wanted the first right of refusal for the next three or four counties or markets. And the challenge with that is that sometimes as we go through development folks or go through personnel changes, we forget about what we have in terms of first rights of refusal out there. And I don't really believe there's any benefit from it, because if, in fact, I had a first right of refusal and you came along and wanted to be in the market I had a first right of refusal on, they'd have to give me 30 days to say yes or no. If I said yes, you're going to be awful upset that I snagged the territory you identified. If I say no, you're going to wonder why I don't want it. And there are typically no benefit to the franchisor for giving it up. So I always recommend to franchisors, if you're going to do a first right of refusal, prefer that you say if you want that territory, let me charge you some nominal fee for it and give you a year or two to go ahead and develop in it. If you don't, it automatically expires. And if someone comes along during the term before it expires, I'm happy to come to you because you do have the right to it. Then you lock it in, you block it off, and you don't end up with a mistake. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, what you're basically saying is don't do first right of refusals. If you're going to do it at all, do an option and with a hard fee against it. And I totally agree with you. I ran a franchise development department for a number of years, and first right of refusals are really a lose-lose on all levels. The person thinks they're getting something, but the reality is most of the time that first right of refusal is delivered to them, that request or question is delivered to them before they're ready to develop it anyhow. And
right.
So they feel pressured when it comes to them. They feel like that's not fair, and how serious is this other person? The other individual, you know, wonders, am I even going to get a chance to look at it? And all the stuff you just mentioned, I would never do a first right of refusal. I just think you just end up, all you have to do is do it a couple of times, Rocco, and then you won't do it anymore because you'll realize what a mess it makes.
Graham, if you remember, I think that came up in our session, and there was one franchisor that said, I do, it was a development individual,
yep.
I do it all the time. My boss doesn't like it, but I do it all the time. I said, well, why do you feel compelled that you have to do it? Why can't you sell around it? There is no benefit to you. And frankly, it's not really a big benefit to the franchise candidate other than
right.
he asked for something and you wanted to give in and give it to him.
Oh, yeah,
but the options do work, though. Options do work well. You have a six-month or a nine-month or a one-year option. You have a hard fee, you know, $5,000 non-refundable fee against it, or $10,000 or whatever the number is based on the size of the option. And then, you know, if they choose to move forward, then they can use that against the total cost to move into it. And if they don't, then it falls away. But it's clearly off the market at that point. And there's a financial number that goes along with that.
It's interesting, most of the time when you do have to ask for some nominal fee to make it a hard territory, they opt out and say, well, thank you very much.
Always. They always
just
say, well,
for
if
free,
it's free,
right?
I'll do it. Yeah, if it's free, I'll do it. But if it's not free, I don't want to pay anything.
Right, and then you alleviate the issue.
Yeah, then you find out how serious they really were, and the reality is they wanted something for nothing.
Yeah. The other thing I always recommend is when it comes to territory, in some brands, it's almost impossible to identify the location at the time of the agreement signing. So in the term sheet or one of the sheets up front in the document, it may say, we've signed a 20-year franchise agreement on this date, and the location is blank, and your exclusive territory is blank. Now, I've been caught as a franchisor by this a couple times, and it stung really bad. When you don't put anything in and the document sits in the drawer for 6 months while the franchise candidate finds the location, it's hard to remember to go back and fill that in or agree at the time that there's going to be a territory. So what I've done recently is I put a default in agreements that I work with that says, in the event the franchise agreement does not have a specific territory, the automatic default territory will be a two-block radius or one-block radius or half-mile radius. Therein lies at least a safety net. When I was a franchisor in previous years, I did have one person in the Midwest that had a 40-mile territory. And a couple years later, we did a deal, and the territory was left open. And when the gentleman went to sell his territory, he said, you know, I don't know what my exclusive area is, so I'll take the largest one you ever had in your system, which happened to be 40 miles. And in that 40 miles, we would have encroached on 5 or 10 franchisees. So just a lesson learned the hard way. I had to buy my way out of that one. Always put a default in there that says, in the event it is blank, here is what your maximum will be. And
yeah,
that will
force them
to remember and negotiate something better.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'd never really thought about that. I guess I'd always been fortunate enough to have a compliance officer who was, you know, all over those sorts of things. And if you didn't get it right, you know, you heard about it the next day. But,
yeah,
but you're right. If it's not covered, you got a problem. That's a really neat little safety valve.
And so many emerging franchisors, although they did use an attorney to write the document, they are somewhat resistant in trying to call them every day to ask questions about territory or things like that because they don't want the fees to be, you know, calculated and start getting bills from the attorney. However, they get themselves in a situation where they don't know what they don't know, and you've got documents in the file that are incomplete, and they always tend to surface and cause problems later on.
Yeah, that's right. And a young franchisor probably wouldn't even have a compliance officer position at that
right.
point.
Exactly. And they don't want to call the lawyer. They're afraid they'll get a $1,000 bill for asking a question.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
true.
A couple little tricks to the trade, because I don't think any one of us will live long enough to make all the mistakes ourselves, right? So we try to learn from others. At least I do.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Let's stick on that type of topic. So, you know, when you're early in your life, like your life as a franchisor, Rick talks about this frequently, the difference between creative entrepreneurs and executive entrepreneurs. So, you know, a creative entrepreneur being someone who is much more suited to having a business on their own, they would be able to survive and thrive as someone who's an entrepreneur outside of the direction or directive of a franchise system, whereas an executive entrepreneur is someone who's much more suited to thrive within, a proven model, a proven system within franchising. If you are cutting deals with early adopter franchisees or doing certain things to attract people who are, you know, ready to buy in on the front end, who don't need the proof or the proven systems fully filleted out to be successful within a system, you're typically or often going to have a lot of creative entrepreneurs coming in as your first few franchisees who are willing and have the ability to do things well without a ton of support behind them. So when you get further down the road and you do have success, you have dozens of franchisees entering the system, you might have some of these original, more creative entrepreneurs who are pushing the envelope more, who may have more of a penchant for going rogue and doing things outside of how you want to control things as a franchisor. And Rocco, you remember this came up in our conversations during the seminar. You know, when is it okay for a franchisee to push the envelope and try new ideas? You know, if a franchisee is going rogue, doing things way outside of what you're looking for from the franchisor end, you know, how do you crack down on those folks without sort of crushing their entrepreneurial spirit? Is there a way or a time where you need to start getting these creative guys out and more executive guys in? I know that's a lot of questions thrown out there, but I guess I just want to set the stage there. You know, when is it okay to push the envelope, and when should a franchisor crack down, and how?
Yeah, so I'll answer that as a franchisee first with my franchisee hat on. If
okay.
I'm in a system that's fairly new and emerging and may not have all of the things in place that can guide me, I certainly would be of the entrepreneurial spirit, and if I felt there was something that I could contribute in a good way through a process, I would certainly advocate for myself within the brand and say to the CEO or the operations folks, I've got a great idea. I'd like you to at least listen to what I've got to say, and maybe we can implement it if it makes sense or do a beta test on it. If it's
mm-hmm.
in a system that's a little more mature, I guess I'd be a little more careful and say, am I the type of entrepreneur that may not be able to work within a mature, refined system? Mature, refined system really would be best if someone were to follow the system and not quit at the 50-yard line versus come in and try to be the entrepreneur and change a system if there is one in place. If there's no system in place, I think franchisees play a huge role in creating with the franchisor and the team the system that will be in place for a long time. So I hope that answered the question. Perfect.
Rocco, I got you were down at the Sun Conference in Fort Lauderdale, weren't you? We were both down there together.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in the room when there was a gentleman who was one of the very first franchisees, I believe it was, with College Hunks, hauling junk. And he stood up and he said, I was one of the first franchisees, and at the time, because I was one of the first ones, you know, there was a lot of creativity, but as it matured, I found myself being a bit of a fish out of water, so I sold the business, and now I'm doing something else. You remember that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, I think, exactly what we're talking about.
Very relative to what we're talking about. Everyone has to understand their role. And if franchisors do not have a system that is proven, they should be open-minded enough to say, let me learn from those who invested in my system. Some franchisees who invest in the system early on have sometimes a bigger investment than the franchisor itself. So it is appropriate to work with them and say, we need to create a few things and put some things in place. What do you recommend? Don't forget, the franchisee not only is an investor in that brand, but, you know, they've got boots on the ground. They're in their stores every day. They're with their customers every day. Some of the folks you hire in the corporate office may not understand that as well.
Yep. And but
I don't know
change.
That there's a hard, fast rule for it. I think it really depends on where they are in the system and what level the entrepreneur/franchisee is at and how they could work together collaboratively to get to where they want to go versus just, it's not your place to do this and I'm the franchisor, I'll take care of that. So that was my franchisee hat. My franchisor hat would say, let me deliver a system that is proven and works, and then let me be disciplined about making sure that we don't have rogue franchisees. But you have to have a system to follow first if you expect people only to follow it.
Yeah, that's really the trick, isn't it? And, you know, we were talking about the ideal situation, I think, last time we did this with Graham, and I said the ideal situation is that the franchisor has 100 locations that they own and operate.
And
then
those
it's proven. Then you can say, this is how it works. You know, you don't even have to go through that initial stage. But we all know that there's a lot of franchises that start out, you know, with one main company, you know, one company-owned operation. They may do it for a year, sometimes 5 years, sometimes 20 years. But then they move into franchising, and that's a lot younger, a lot more evolution that occurs in those kind of situations.
And, you know, I've been a young franchisor. And I've had franchisees in my system from other brands, and at the time, at certain times, I felt that it was the tail wagging the dog, and some of my franchisees were larger than us. but I was, it happens. It happens a lot. It will continue to happen, especially now. And, Rick, you know this, in the last 5 to 10 years, a majority of new franchisees become multi-unit franchisees and then multi-brand franchisees, where they have multiple units within one brand and they take on another brand in the same market. So they're really management companies. They're building infrastructure and teams that can manage brands. And they're specifically looking for brands that are mature. But even in a mature brand, if you don't have a vehicle to be able to work with your franchisees, whether it's the Franchise Advisory Council or some type of a program where you can get creative ideas from your system, whether it's employees or franchisees, you're really limiting yourself to your ability to grow. And with technology moving as fast as it is, I look for as much help as I can get from any and all groups, any and all generations, whether it's millennials or Gen Xers or Gen Yers, to say, if you were king or queen for a day, what would you be doing? What are we missing? Why should we do it? What's the investment? What would it do to the bottom line?
Yep, absolutely,
Rocco, we touched on a lot of this stuff last time, so I want to make sure you sort of infuse your creative mind here, because you were definitely a creative entrepreneur in your own right. When you think back to the seminar we went to, or potentially even some of the meetings that you may have been a part of at the IFE show that you and I attended last week, I guess what were sort of the hot button topics or questions that came up that you might like, you know, might want to introduce to our conversation today, and we could sort of tackle those instead?
A couple things last week that came up at the Franchise Expo in New York. We did a lot of seminars, did financing, of course. You know, I would share with anyone listening in, SBA is alive and well. Financing is readily available. Access to credit is readily available. So work with a funding partner, whether it's Bennett Friends or anyone that you currently work with or can work with, to get to understand your brand. A lot of franchisors, a lot of new franchisors at the show, first-time exhibitors. And, you know, it's so interesting, Graham, because we're in the financing business, we kind of see it, I guess, kind of have a little more focus on it. But so often I find new brands that do all this really creative stuff on their website, pick a new logo that looks like it's a national brand, and everyone wants to look a little bigger than they are. And they have a cool website because, well, let's face it, anytime anyone wants to do any research on any brand, even before they may even get to Rick or after Rick may recommend a few brands, they're going to go right to the website and go look at these websites.
Absolutely.
On these free brands that Rick may recommend.
Yep.
Secondly, they're going to schedule a call with a really high-priced, very experienced type of development person that Rick is going to count on to really explain the concept and see if it's a good fit. Thirdly, they're going to do a really cool discovery day. All the bows and whistles, everything, all the stops are going to be pulled out. The office is going to be clean, neat, and shiny, and balloons all over, and we got all this sizzle going on. And then when the candidate finally says, wow, after 6 weeks of due diligence, I think you're best in class and best in category. I like it. I'd like to join the company. How do I finance this $300,000 investment? And then the wheels come off the bus and they say, well, we don't provide financing, which I understand, but you should have a source for it just the way you have a source for the hamburger meat or the French fries, because you wouldn't want them just going anywhere to a bank, explaining to the banker in their neighborhood about your brand. Frankly, they just learned about your brand, so they really don't know enough to tell a banker why it would be a good investment for him to lend him the money to buy your brand. So I always encourage everyone to find a funding partner just the way you find a supplier for all the other things, whether it's exercise equipment or hamburger patties or anything else. It's consistent, and it will help your brand be more consistent. But what I saw, I guess, last week was a lot of new emerging franchisors that were really struggling to get their arms around how they compete with all of these candidates. When you think about it, if you were selling popcorn as a franchise brand, you not only have competitors in the popcorn space, you really have a competitor in every franchise brand. All of them are looking at franchising in general, not just a category yet. So you have to compete with all those brands, not just your category.
I tell you what, I think it's actually, you know, having done this for many, many years, I think that even that's too narrow, Rocco. you aren't. You are not competing. Nobody says, I want to be a franchisee.
Right.
Everybody comes into it from the point of view and saying, I need to make a change. I'm looking for a solution. I'm looking for a path forward to get me from where I am right now to where I want to be in the future. That might include a job. That could include a bootstrap startup. That could include, you know, joining Uncle Joe in his existing business and, you know, buying into ownership there. There's so many different paths, and franchising is one of those paths. And so I think it's even a wider set of options that most people have, other than, you know, is it popcorn or is it cinnamon rolls, right? It's usually a much larger question that people are asking themselves.
Yeah, I agree, Rick. It's a lifestyle they're looking for, and you well know, you profile a lot of folks that come to you and say, what do I do? How do I do it? What does it cost? And in a lot of cases, I always, you know, see that the most success comes from those who kind of follow their passion, because it's just so easy. But a lot of folks get in the business they never thought they'd be in, because they never could see themselves or picture themselves in that business, until they kind of talk to a consultant like yourself about it and say, wow, I guess I could see myself in that. I mean, they just never realized, they just never imagined myself photoshopped into that category. It's really kind of cool.
It is, and when people follow their passion, it's one of the biggest ways in which people make mistakes, you know. I mean, just because you like to do engineering doesn't mean you should own an engineering firm, right, because that requires business-to-business development skills. Just because you like to cook doesn't mean you should be opening a restaurant necessarily, because if you own a restaurant, you shouldn't be cooking. You should be managing employees, dealing with customers, working in the evenings, working on the weekends. So there's just, it's so important to, I call it building the box. You know, build the box, figure out what you want, figure out what that profile is first before you even look at ideas.
And, you know, we touched on that a little bit in the group. We had we certainly had some franchisors that were emerging, and the question came up, and some franchisees that were building their second, third, and fourth store. And the question came up, you know, how do I get from manager to leader? Because I'm managing a store, but now I just opened two or three more, and I now have to manage all of those or find managers to do that. You know, one of the big challenges I see all the time is folks that have been working for a large corporation or even a small corporation for that matter for some period of time, once they become entrepreneurs, they wear a lot of hats. And sometimes they struggle with delegating. And when you wear a lot of hats and you want to grow, you've got to give up some of those duties and delegate those out to other folks. Now, that doesn't mean that you will find someone as good as you to do it. For example, I love to cut the lawn, but it's not the best use of my time. So I can't stay home every Friday and cut the lawn. And I know that it would be manicured better than any landscaper I can pay to do it, but it's not the best use of my time. And sometimes I find folks that have bought a franchise doing things, you know, transactions, working the counter, cleaning the tables, and I say, while you're cleaning the tables, things are going on in the back room that you probably want to know about. So that may not be the best use of your time. Find someone that can do it as good or as close to good as possible, because there's other things you have to do. You got to keep your eye on the ball. Like you just said, not all chefs are good restaurateurs or good businessmen.
Yeah, and that's a comment really that is, you know, well beyond franchising. That's just life, isn't it? It's
yep.
Absolutely. You know, you have to be willing to replace yourself.
If you want to grow, I mean, there are certainly some folks that want to buy a job and they want to manage their store with two or three employees, and they do a great job at it. There's nothing wrong with that. But most recently, in the last 5 years, we've seen franchisees want to elevate to the next level and get to 2, 3, 4, and 5 units and really become leaders and really create a business for themselves, not just operate a unit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on that topic, so if you are a franchise prospect and you're trying to determine, you know, do I want to buy a job or am I trying to grow, become a multi-unit franchisee, I guess what do I want to get from this and how do I make sure the system I'm buying into allow me to do that? You know, something else that came up, and this is the last question we'll have time for today. Something else that came up in that meeting was, you know, what should franchisees learn during phone calls with existing franchisees, and how can, you know, franchise coaches like Rick or franchise development teams ensure they are asking the right questions? Because Rocco, as you remember, our speaker at that point said, you know, there's three things that, you know, our franchisees are typically asked. Are they making money? You know, would they buy in again? And what's the support like? And, you know, when I mentioned that to Rick last time, Rick about fell off his chair. So I guess from your perspective, Rocco, I mean, and you can put either one of those hats on or both of them as you did. That was a good take. You know, I guess what should aspiring franchisees learn during those calls to figure out if they're going to have the chance to grow or if they're going to be able to be satisfied with just having the job and not delegating as they want?
Yeah, so I think candidates, when they call existing franchisees, should be certainly prepared to do so. You don't want to waste anyone's time, especially if they're kind enough to give you time away from their business. So those questions certainly come up. Are you making money? And, you know, that is a relative question. Some may say, no, I'm not, but I'm having fun. Or, yes, I am, and it's relative, and I'm happy. The support, I mean, I don't think there's a perfect system out there, but is it right for you? Is it right for the brand? So all those questions are good questions. One of the things I try to share with candidates when I speak with them is probably in every system, there's somewhat of a bell curve. There's maybe 10% of the system that is underperforming, 80% in the middle that's very content and performing well and year-over-year increases, you know, 2, 3, 4%. And then there's 10% at the bottom of that bell curve that really knocked the cover off the ball. They're the top guns. And I always try to say to them, where do you see yourself in this bell curve? Do you see yourself kind of just struggling along in the bottom 10%? Do you see yourself as, you know, the majority? You always be able to kind of, you know, stay up with the Joneses and make sure everything's done? Or do you see yourself in life as the top gun, always outperforming everyone else? Because based on what you say, they're the folks you should call. They're the ones that are most relative to what you may really be interested in. Does that make sense, Rick?
Yeah, it does. I think that this is how we left it last time, actually, with the end of our conversation with Graham last time. But, you know, you come from a financing background. So if a franchisee, let's say you're a franchisee and you ask me, you say, hey, Rick, you know, are you making any money? And I say, you know, honestly, I haven't paid myself a salary now for 2 years. Or I say to you, well, my business hasn't shown any profit for 2 years. What does that tell you about my business?
Well, one would have to say, if you haven't made any money for 2 years or haven't taken a salary, did you plan on continuing to pour money into the business, because you would have had to continue to make continuous investments in it? Now, you may say that and say, well, but I'm paying my debt service, I'm paying other things, I'm paying some personal things. So there's a lot in that. There's a lot of noise in that. I don't know if they really get to the right answer. That's what's more difficult about it.
That's why I think it's such a bad question. I think that
right.
when you ask that question, you receive information back from the franchisee, but it's irrelevant because you don't know how they got to that information. You don't know what's included in it. I think in many ways that information you receive, when you ask that question, you get that information back. I think it's worse than no information. When you have no information,
right.
you know you're ignorant. But now you think you have knowledge, but you aren't. You're actually confused. And so it's my thought, and I mean, in my book, Chapter 12, I have a whole chapter on this, that you work the P&L from the top down. You figure out what the expenses are. You figure out what the income line items are. You figure out your fixed cost, your variable cost. You figure out how the P&L actually works. And then you know what it takes to break even without all the noise that we put into the normal P&L. And the real point, I guess, that we were talking about last time, Graham, was you cannot, as a franchisor, or even as a franchise coach, either way, we cannot assume that the franchisee knows what questions to ask, knows which franchisees to call, or knows how to build P&Ls.
Yep.
That's our job, to teach them. It's our job to guide them, to help them understand it. The best franchisors, I think you said the cleaning authority was in the room, if I remember correctly.
They were.
The cleaning authority not only gives them a list of questions, but they also give them a blank P&L. They say, here are the line items. Go talk to the franchisees, figure out how they work. And that, to me, is educational because it allows the franchise prospect to really figure out how that P&L works as opposed to just simply saying, are you making money, or how long before your business showed profit, or any of these bottom-line questions, which can be exceptionally misleading.
It's a loaded question. Rarely does it get answered thoroughly. I think what Cleaning Authority does by providing a template is smart. It'll get folks to understand clearly what the line items are, what the cost structures are, where your gross margins are, and then what they do with the rest. And, you know, a sophisticated franchisee may say, listen, you know, this is certainly worth the investment, and I know what the ramp-up time is before I get to profitability, and I'm comfortable with it, and I've gotten to that level, and I certainly am, you know, profitable as an organization. There's a lot of ways to answer that question. And as you said, Rick, you alluded to the fact that most of the new candidates who ask that question are not really aware of how to understand or work with the answers they're given.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people I talk to say, oh, that's too complicated, I can't do that. And I say, well, can you pay your bills?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you have income, that's your salary, you have expenses, and then you have what's left over. That's all we're talking about.
Right.
You just work it from the top down. And if you do that, you're going to end up with a much better answer. And later on, as you build your business, you're going to know where you are because you'll have a valid P&L you're balancing against. And, you know, that was the soapbox that
stuff.
I got on last
Love
time.
Oh, yeah, that's something Rick as a franchise coach is very passionate about and should be. that's a big part of what you help prospects understand and help them navigate that process better. So that's great stuff. Well, unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to have to shut us down for today, even though I'm sure we could talk a lot more about conferences, how to leverage those, and you know, what tools franchise prospects should use online. And I hate we can't dig into that, but it was great stuff today for sure. Rocco, thank you for joining us. You know, if any of our listeners want to reach out to you after the fact, if they have questions, they want to learn more about Benetrends or learn more about you specifically, how should they do that?
My email is simply rocco@benetrends.com, rocco@benetrends.com. So be happy to respond to anyone who reaches out.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, I hope you guys both enjoy your Friday and your weekend. All of you folks out there, I hope you guys do the same. Of course, you can find this episode on iTunes and on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be taking hits, clips from this and other episodes. The important information, the things that answer big questions, those will appear on SoundCloud and YouTube with our other top hits. Of course, Rick has another article coming out soon in Entrepreneur and is consistently contributing to Franchise Gator, and you can find all of us on LinkedIn. And of course, if you want to reach out to us with questions, find us on Twitter @EducatedZ. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We hope to have you back on the show soon. Rocco, thank you again.
Thank you, Graham. I appreciate
Thanks,
it. Looking
Graham.
Forward to it. Rick, everyone, have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Bye.
Everyone. See you later.
Bye-bye.